Wait a minute. Slow this down. No way, no how. That ain't happening. Let's go back to the beginning, like I always do it.
Absolute power corrupts absolutely.
That's more like it. Once again, y'all know what time it is. This is the 10 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. I'm always the timekeeper. I always say that when I open every show. But the time is right because this is JT, a.k.a. the Master, and I am in and talking to you from the Master Plan. I'll tell you right now, the number to call in is 347-637-3220. 347-637-3220 is the place to be if you want to talk to me. We also have the chat room is open, as always. Fire away whatever you want in that chat room. Ask a question. Make a statement or a comment. No matter what it is, if you want to use the chat room versus talking to me, I don't even know why you wouldn't want to talk to me. But if you want to go that avenue and use the chat room, you can do that. We can answer your questions here. But today, for the next few minutes that we're on the air, week two in fantasy football, week two in reality football, as they play, as another host of another show says, as they play for pay, I'm going to be breaking down all the games, every game. I'm not worried about who wins or loses. I could care less. I have one team that I care about winning or losing. That happens to be my Houston Texans. But every other team, I could care less who wins, who loses. I'm talking about fantasy. And if you are deal with fantasy in a financial way, then things that you information that you want to get for fantasy that'll help and benefit your team, you get it from every avenue, every venue that you can possibly get to gain knowledge to get that upper hand on your opponent of that week or your opponent for next week. So tune in because besides breaking down every game, as in fantasy-wise, not whether who wins or loses. Like I said, I could care less about that. I'm going to be giving you some wide receivers, a defense I really like this week, some running backs to take a look at, maybe pick up, and a quarterback or two that probably since week one is – on the radar. But if it's not on the radar, and if you have a spare slot and you're wandering around for that extra player, whatever position it is, hopefully I'll give you some suggestions. And then you go from there on whether you want to pick them up or not. Say I'm full of it. Say I don't know what I'm talking about. I'm blowing it out my butt. Whatever. I'm just putting the information out there as I see it, okay? I'm not saying I'm the be-all, end-all, the be-all. I'm just saying I'm putting the information out there. Some of it you may take it. Some of it you may just throw it away and go your way, which is fine. You listen to these sites. You look at these sites online or you listen to different TV programs, these fantasy programs that they have on Sundays or you listen to, you look at the different sites of fantasy that they have at during the week, and including today, and you take some information and you discard some information. But that's just fine. Do what you like. I'm just trying to get out there. I'm just another, if for lack of a better word, and I've said it before, some so-called expert that, so you want to label me as a so-called expert? I'm just a Joe, just giving my opinion. I think I've been pretty good in the some analysis of quite naturally. If I could be 100%, I wouldn't be. And I'm not no knock on Block Talk Radio, but I wouldn't be on Block Talk Radio. I would be on national TV, sitting up there on whatever site, station, giving out my information as I see it. But I'm not 100%. No one's 100%. Even the so-called top experts aren't 100%. And they get some good ones, they get some bad ones. But I tell you this, and for the last few years I've done it, and I'll keep on doing it. I've pulled players out, and I've called players out. Not called players out. I made you aware of players before, a week or two or 3 weeks before you've heard that player mentioned on these programs on TV. I'm just saying. Now, I may not have done it all the time, but I've done it quite a few times over the years. I do a lot of research. I do a lot of research. I do research and look around and watch football and watch different players on football teams and look at what teams are saying about certain players, whether it's good or bad. Because if it's good, that player quite naturally is probably going to get some more playing time. If it's bad, that player that is not doing well, their backup may get more playing time. So I'm looking at that as well. So there's more than one way to look at this, and I'm hoping I help you. Let me put it this way: I'm hoping I help you from week to week, and as we accumulate to you getting into the playoffs near the end of fantasy football season, and hopefully get you into to playoffs, like I said, and then hopefully get you to a championship or two. And if it does, I really would like for you to call me. One, if you get in the playoffs because of some of the picks I've helped you with, and if you happen to win a championship or two or three or whatever, I'd like you to drop me a line either on my email address, because I'm freely giving out my email address. I have no problem with it. I have more than one, but I'll give you my email address, or call me up and let me know. Hey, man, you really helped me out. Some of the information that you gave me was BS, but the some other information you gave me really helped me out, that helped me gain the edge of my league, helped me get to the playoffs, and then eventually helped me win a championship, and I want to thank you. That's all. I mean, a simple thank you is good enough for me. That knows that somebody was listening out there, and someone may have taken some of the advice I've had and used it, and it benefited them, which gives me a warm feeling inside when someone would acknowledge that I helped them do something like that. I also want to talk about, and the opening song was something that was directed at one particular person, a fight judge, C.J. Ross. One of the things I want to talk about before I go into the games is a big fight, a huge fight that took place last night. A huge fight. We're talking about Canelo Alvarez against Floyd Money-Making Mayweather. in what some were calling Mayweather's toughest test in many years. I've said it, and a few other guys that have been on here, Macau, Ricky, and a few others that I've called in, and except for Mr. Gardner, said that this would be no problem. He's going to teach the young boy, and that is exactly what happened. He authored a clinic as he rolled to a majority decision, and I'm going to talk about that, to unify the junior middleweight world titles last night, and it was on Mexican Independence Day weekend. Now, he's not a dummy, and I'm pretty sure people that know boxing and are familiar with Floyd Mayweather knows that he's not a dummy. He's a major. He's a very good promoter of his fights. They sold out the MGM Grand Arena with the all-time gate record of $20 million, over $20 million. And that was set by the 16,746 in attendance. And I saw the fight from start to finish, okay? And let me tell you something. Stars were all over the place in this, all over the place. I mean, the camera probably didn't get all the stars. Jack Nicholson, oh my God, I can't, I got a blank. Jack Nicholson, the Beaver was in Mayweather's corner. Denzel Washington was there. I saw some other stars, and I can't recall who they were, but this was a star-laden event, quite naturally, because this is one of the bigger fights of the year and over for many years. Well, let me put it this way. I said it before, and I'll say it again. I said this is a great white hype, and it was. It was the great white hype because the simple fact is I said this guy was going to take – to Mayweather was going to take this – due to school, and he did. From the beginning, this Alvarez was frustrated. Couldn't, wherever he threw a punch, Floyd wasn't there for the most part. Floyd threw 505 punches. 232 got landed compared to Alvarez, who was just a little bit busier. He threw 526, but he only got landed 117, just like I said. And that stat and the percentage of landed punches was 46% to 22%. Mayweather, quite naturally, had the majority. And that's courtesy of CompuBox. So it's not just something I'm pulling out there. And I'm telling you, frustration reigned on this kid from the beginning. He could not hit Floyd. Floyd tattooed him and got away. Tattooed him and got away. He did as he pleased from the first round to the 12th round, okay? And the crowd was overwhelmingly cheering for Alvarez, all right? And this is a quote from Floyd. Canelo's a young, strong champion, a great Mexican champion. I take my hat off to him and to Mexico. He can take a loss and bounce back. 17 years, and I'm still going strong. I think I had pressed the attack earlier. I could have gotten a stoppage, but I'm very happy with my performance. Now, let me tell you something. And the commentator, when I was watching this fight, made it very clear, and I didn't think about this before. 3-minute rounds. Floyd gets in there, and if the opposing boxer doesn't press him, Floyd coasts for about the first minute and a half, give or take. And then he goes to work. So even though the rounds are 3.5 minutes, Floyd's working for half the time. So it's a minute, little over a minute and a half. He's working. Okay? So it may, like I said, maybe 3 minutes, but he's only working half the amount of time in the ring. I mean, in the rounds. He was fresh from start to finish. Canelo's 23 years old. Floyd Mayweather is 36 years old, and he looked like he looked every bit as energetic, if not more, than Canelo Alvarez. Now I have to premise this, because when I opened the show, I opened up with a Jimmy Cliff song. I can see clearly now. Well, I hope one of these judges, C.J. Ross, can see clearly now, because this is the second time she's done this in a big fight. She did it in the Pacquiao Alvarez fight, and she did it again in this fight. Now, the judges, the three judges, Dave Moretti, Craig Metcliffe, and C.J. Ross. Dave Moretti had it 116-112. Mayweather. Craig Metcalf had it 117-111. Mayweather. Judge C.J. Ross. Now, what the hell was she looking at? 114-114. Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? And I'm sorry when I said that. She did the same thing in a Timothy Bradley Jr. decision win against Manny Pacquiao in one of the most controversial decisions in years. Are you kidding me? She had it 1-4. She had it even. Even. This is a travesty. And the thing about it, and Teddy Atlas said it on after the fight. And he's right. This is going to bring down boxing, because there's no regulatory authority to oversee boxing. There's no commissioner. There's nothing that can stop something like this or reprimand a judge for a bogus 114-114 when it's clearly that Mayweather was just outpointed him. Just outpointed him. It was ridiculous. How can you have an absolute 114-114 decision in a fight like this when and everybody who watched the fight on closed circuit TV or pay per view, everybody who was in attendance, regardless if you're a Mexican favoring Alvarez or not, saw that Floyd Mayweather completely dominated that fight from start to finish, and was nothing even about it at all. Nothing even about it. And I'm as much as I keep on talking about it, I'm getting more and more upset. Well, the simple fact is, there's nothing to hold these judges accountable to. Let me put it that way. Nothing. That C.J. Ross, she just sits there, and she must have just, you know, she must have, let me put it this way. In my opinion, she wasn't watching a fight. She had a preconceived decision that she was going to put down even before the fight went off, okay? And she was going to make it an even. Come on. Come on. You got football, basketball, baseball, hockey. They all have commissioners. They all have some regulatory to hold the referees or officials accountable for making decisions during the competition. NFL referees get reprimanded all the time. So do umpires. So do officials in hockey games, in basketball games. They make wrong decisions. They're held accountable to it. They make obvious decisions that are wrong. They're accountable for it. Boxing doesn't. And this is why there's so much scrutiny when a judge does something like this. Now, supposedly the judge didn't know what the other decisions for the other judges were, and she could have screwed this fight up. I have a caller from 202. I think I know who this is. Welcome to the Master Plan. Is this Black?
Good morning, sir. Good morning.
I happen to be ranting about this fight for the simple fact is Judge Dave Moretti got it right. Judge Craig Metcalf got it right. But where the hell C.J. Ross was looking at, I have no clue at all. From the first bell to the end of the fight, there was complete domination. This looked like it was a workout and not a boxing match. And she 114, Black, talk to me.
I actually thought that was Rudy Gay sitting ringside. Remember the story about Rudy Gay saying that he needed eye surgery before the season, that his vision wasn't good during the season? I said, is Rudy Gay out there? Is that Rudy Gay sitting in that judge's seat? Because I couldn't believe it. It was crazy, but hey, the tactician went to work last night, didn't he?
Oh, man, it was, like I said, from start to finish, it was like, step up, young boy, and let me show you how it's done. Let me put it that way. He completely frustrated me. He couldn't do anything with him. And the analyzer from the, I forget what station I was listening to, said that it looked like halfway through the fight or early in the fight, that Canelo knew that he's not going to win this fight. There was no way. He was getting frustrated. He got frustrated early in the fight, and it carried on for the whole fight. I mean, it was like Floyd knew, I guess from the opening bell when he got into the first round, this kid's got nothing for me, and I'm going to frustrate him. And he alluded that he probably could have taken this kid out, but Floyd is the master showman. I got to give it to the man. He, besides being a hell of a boxer, he carried this fight. I think he could have ended it sooner, but he wanted to give the people a show, and so he likes carrying these rounds, like carrying these fights the whole length of the fight from start to finish, rather than
what about the fight just before that one, the Matisse Garcia fight? Man. I actually told Matisse he was going to be able to hang with Garcia, but Garcia proved me wrong last night.
Wow, yeah, man. You know, that fight, I thought that was going to be a more competitive fight, but Garcia, in my opinion, took him apart. And that's another guy who in that fight, Alvarez, he got frustrated. He was getting frustrated because he couldn't do what he wanted to do, and Garcia had every answer he needed to defeat him. I was really impressed with Danny Garcia last night. I thought he was going to get beat last night, just like you, and he really stepped up and surprised me. He's really coming into his own, and I think he's learning a lot from fight to fight. So.
Yeah, he definitely is.
One of the things I was saying, Black, and the announcer had made it clear later in the fight, and I took notice of it, that Mayweather in this fight, like the first minute and a half, he kind of coasted, and then he went to work. At the last half of the round. So rather than fighting really 3 minutes, he was fighting a minute and a half. You follow me? So
yeah,
even
that's generally the rule that most boxers follow. You're not going to fight for over 3 minutes after every round. You're going to take some time off because you got to pace yourself just in case it goes through.
It was. You know, I'm gushing, but I'm not gushing over Mayweather because he went to work, and he picked apart this kid. Kid had one he didn't have an answer. One punch after another, he threw the punch. Mayweather wasn't there. He threw another punch. Mayweather wasn't there. I mean, he was like, how can I hit this kid? I can see the look on his faces. How can I hit him? I'm throwing punches, and most time these things land, and he's not there.
Yeah.
He threw more punches than Mayweather, and he landed a lot less. than Mayweather. I had this. This is a stat I got. Mayweather threw 505 punches. He landed 232, which is a 46% landing. Alvarez threw 526, and he only landed 117. Come on, man, 22%. Come on, man. And he said it in the ring after the interview. He just frustrated me. I couldn't hit him. I mean, he just outboxed me. And to that, you know, and I was saying this before, there is no regulatory authority that can reprimand any of these boxing judges like they do with officials or referees in the other sports. T.J. Russ, this is not the first time she's been in made a controversial decision. I mentioned it, and it was a Timothy Bradley and Pacquiao fight.
Yeah.
Where she made a controversial decision and caused Pacquiao to lose that fight, or helped cause it to lose that fight. So, 114-114. I can't get over that. And you saw the look on Mayweather's face when it said there's a majority decision. It says, uh-oh, here it comes. And when it ran off the two judges that gave the fight to Mayweather, and then it ran off the 114-114 from C.J. Russ. Mayweather said, I'm not in control of the judges. I'm a little in shock, but everything is a learning experience. Man, that's crazy. That is crazy. And that was easy money. He got a guaranteed record purse of $41.5 million.
Yes, indeed. That's good.
For just getting in the ring and basically doing a sparring match. That's basically what he did. He basically did a sparring match because, look, if you look on his face, he only sweated. He didn't get hit. He only sweated. He only got a workout. He didn't get hit. I mean, he got punches landed, but nothing that really did anything to his face. Maybe body and arm shots, but that's about it.
Yeah, he was good this morning.
Now, let me tell you, let me ask you something. Where and who does he go to now?
That's a good question. You look around, there's not much left.
No. And he's got what?
I really don't think there's any interest in seeing Pacquiao Mayweather at this point, even though the diehard is still want to see this fight made.
Mm-hmm.
But, there's not too much left.
And he's got, what, two fights left after this?
Especially if they're trying to break this record, because, you know, they're all about breaking records. But I don't see anything. Like, I heard a couple of guys last night tell me that unless Floyd was fighting Tupac or Biggie, that's the last time they're paying for a Floyd fight. So.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think there's anybody else left for him.
Yeah, but he's still got two fights left on his contract with Showtime before he hangs him up.
Yeah.
Where is he going to go? You think he's going to try to fight Garcia?
That could be in the works.
We'll have to wait. He may decide to tell us near the end of this year or beginning of next year or whatever, when he wants to hype up a fight. And the thing about it, one of the things I looked at before also, that when he got interviewed by Jim Gray, that he said, Mayweather said when he woke up, he was 146 pounds. He had lost weight, so he had to call his chef, in to whip up something so he could get something on to get his weight up. So I don't know what he did overnight that would cause him to lose 3.5 pounds.
That's his body working, man. You know, high metabolism.
Yeah.
The guy's always in shape.
And the thing about it, Mayweather was 150 and a half, and Alvarez went all the way up to 165 on fight night. Is that crazy or what?
No, you know, as soon as that weigh-in was over, those guys were going to hit the buffet, hit whatever they did, try to rehydrate, get the good Gatorade and everything. And you knew that was coming. I was surprised it didn't come in at 170.
Mm. Wow. Big kid, big strong kid, just typical.
He'll bounce back. I mean, like I was telling you, he'll bounce back. I mean, you'll give him, 42-1 now, and that one loss is to arguably the greatest fighter in the sport. He'll bounce back.
Yeah, and that's
not a bad limit to have at all.
No, and, you know, I'm not exactly sure what his payday is, but I know he got paid here too. So we'll see what happens. I mean, Mayweather's got two more fights. I guess he'll be the only other fighter that if he can pull this off to go out undefeated. And I'm really anxious to see if he can do it. I don't see anybody out there that can possibly blemish that record. So we'll have to wait and see. Maybe, you know what? I keep on thinking about this freaking CJ Ross. Maybe because of in the last round, about 35 seconds left in the last round, Mayweather gave a low blow to Alvarez, and that dissuaded her to even it out. I don't know. It sounded like she just had a preconceived score before the fight even went off, and she just watched the fight, and she had the score written down already before the fight went off, and decided, okay, now we'll bring it out because it's time to give her the score, because she wasn't looking at the same fight millions of people were looking at. So, anyway, let's move on.
I just got a text that potential next opponent, possibly for Mayweather, Timothy Bradley.
Really?
In case he gets past Juan Manuel Marquez, or maybe a rematch with Miguel Cotto. None of those fights interest me at all.
No, not at all. Nope.
And I don't know if Floyd wants to jump up a weight and try to go dominate another weight class. I doubt if he does that. He might. But as far as Canelo goes, there might be a possibility of Canelo and Manny Pacquiao, another little bit of payday fight coming up for Alvarez.
Mm-hmm. Well, you think Pacquiao's still got any kind of draw? I mean,
we'll see what he does in China. You know, his fight is coming up in November. We'll see how that goes down.
Mm-hmm.
Could be Cotto for Alvarez as well, and maybe Sergio Martinez.
Okay. All right, let's move on. I want to transition this into some fantasy football now. So we're going to be talking about the up-and-coming game.
And I checked out your message.
What do you think of it, man? I used that press conference.
At first, I thought you were going to pull the Dennis Green on me and smack the podium. But I think he's calm.
I got a kick out of that. I tried it in another league, and it worked out pretty well. So you know what? Let me try it. I'm going up against one of my guys. So let me give him one of these and see what's what. And
I know the guys in my sports group I posted up in there. They love it. They can't stand me in there.
Is that right?
So you got a whole sports group behind you.
In the same league? In the same league?
I think it's like two guys in the league. My boy Norris and I think Black Tie. But they love it.
They seen it already?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I like that feature, man. That's pretty good that you can do something like that. All right, let's move on to the first game I want to talk about. The Falcons going home to host the Rams. I think the underrated Rams will try to keep this close until the end. I think the Falcons are going to bounce back. I like the Darryl Richardson. I think he's going to, I want to say, come out this week, but I think he's going to be rushing for more than he did quite naturally in the first game. I see him about 60 yards and a touchdown in this. I think he can definitely run on the Atlanta Falcons. I'm looking for a real good performance from one of my sleeper tight ends that I talked about earlier before the season started, and that's Jared Cook. He's finally getting used the way he should be used, that he wasn't used in Tennessee. He had a huge game, 141 yards or something like that, and a couple touchdowns, and he could have had a third if he had held on to, but had an outstanding play from the Honey Badger to knock the ball out before he got into the end zone. Otherwise, he would have 140-something yards and three touchdowns in his debut with the Rams last week. I think he's going to be heavily involved in the pass offense. He's going to have about six catches at least, about 60, 70 yards, and I think he definitely gets into the end zone. He's becoming a favorite target of Sam Bradford. And I also think, and some people probably won't, but I think this guy, he's a big play guy. I wouldn't say he's a boomer bust, but he's been pretty consistent in getting about four or five catches and about 50 yards, 50 or 60 yards. I'm talking about Chris Givens. I think he also gets into the end zone. I think this is going to be a fairly high-scoring game. Both these offenses, I think, can put some points on the board. And the two wide receivers, Julio Jones is dealing with a knee issue. Roddy White is dealing with an ankle. So that is not a good thing for Matt Ryan. And I think the Rams can put up some numbers. Steven Jackson is going to go. It's going up against his old team, the Rams. Is he going to prove that you shouldn't have gotten rid of me, or I'm glad you got rid of me? Because I'm in Atlanta now, and I think he's going to be able to run. I think he's going to get some tough yards because St. Louis is a tough run defense. He's a definitely good play here today, Steven Jackson. I like him. If not for even rushing, which he normally gets his 70 to 80 yards, I think he gets into the end zone because of this offense. They usually like to run it when they get close to the end zone. It's up in the air what Julio and what Roddy White do because they're dealing with injuries. Quite naturally, a lot of people have been picking up or have picked up and using as a probably flex play is Harry Douglas, who was had a good showing last week. And I think he's going to have a pretty good showing if one of these prominent wide receivers take a step back and don't do as much. Roddy White
was a bust for me last week.
Yeah, he was more of a decoy than anything else last week, and Harry Douglas played well. So that's the dilemma that you have dealing with Roddy White in this. You got any comments before we move on?
No, just continue with these busts. I know all these big names were busts week one, so I know you got some more coming.
Yeah. Over here in let's go to the next one. Carolina versus the Bills. All right, in Buffalo. Buffalo lost a heartbreaker to the New England Patriots. Now they got to regroup and go up against a good defense. This is not a easy game for Buffalo at all. I got a guy here that I think is going to have a decent day, not a crazy day, but I think he's going to have a decent day. He ran well against the Seattle Seahawks, and I think he can run well against his Buffalo defense. D'Angelo Williams. A lot of people, I picked up D'Angelo Williams, I think, in one or two of my leagues. And I've gotten strange looks or, like, why'd you pick him up? Because the general consensus is D'Angelo Williams and Jonathan Stewart. Well, he's not there, but D'Angelo Williams is pretty much not doing as much, doing as well. He's 30 years old, and he's on a offense with Cam Newton, who likes to run the ball in the end zone. Well,
Tolbert is still on that offense too, isn't he?
What's that?
I said Tolbert is still on that offense too, Mike Tolbert.
Yes, Tolbert's still in his offense, but he doesn't really have a prominent role in the offense. This is the deal here, people. Jonathan Stewart's not there. Mike Shula, he's one of the most inept offensive coordinators going. They changed the offense from last year. And toward the end of last year, Cam Newton was more in the pocket of a pocket. He was more of a pocket passer than he had been in the earlier part of the year. And they had success near the end of the last year, and they wanted to carry that over into this year and have Cam Newton stay in the pocket more. That means D'Angelo Williams is going to get more opportunities. More opportunities going to give him opportunities to run the ball. And like most running backs, when they get fed the ball more, they get into a rhythm and they're able to be more effective in the running game and wear the opposing defense down. D'Angelo Williams ran well. I think he had 70, 80 yards against a Seattle Seahawks last week. Buffalo defense is nowhere close to Seattle. So he's going to be given the ball to run. And I think D'Angelo Williams is going to get close to 100 yards. And this is a bold statement. I think he's going to get close to 100 yards today and get into the end zone because they're going to try to run the ball against Buffalo, who doesn't have a good run defense. And then quite naturally use play action to get Steve Smith open and also Greg Olsen open to make plays down the field. On the other side, C.J. Spiller. Now, I have C.J. Spiller in a few leagues. He's got one of the tougher opposing run schedules this year. And he's running up against a very stout run defense in Carolina. Very underestimated, this Carolina defense. Very underestimated, his run defense. But I look for C.J. Spiller to have a bounce-back week. Week one, he didn't come out too well. Week one, he disappointed a lot of fantasy owners who picked C.J. Spiller in the first round. C.J. Spiller was definitely a first-round pick because they expected – well, they listened to all the hype. They said they were going to run C.J. Spiller into the ground till he threw up. So they expected more opportunities means a dynamic player like C.J. Spiller, they're going to give him the ball as much as they can, either pass the ball – or throw the ball to him or handing the ball off and having him run the ball. Well, it didn't happen week one. A lot of owners are like, is he going to do this? But it's only week one. C.J. Spiller, this is going to be a very tough test for him, but I think he's at least going to be able to get the 70, 80 yards and maybe have a breakaway play to get him that one touchdown. E.J. Manuel's one more game under his belt. I don't think he's going to be doing too much against his defense. He's going to be throwing the ball to Stevie Johnson. And one rookie to the other, he's going to be throwing the ball to Robert Woods. Robert Woods, last week I talked about Robert Woods. One catch, one touchdown. That's all he had. I expect him to be a little bit more involved in the offense. And I like him to do well. But he's a wait and see. He's a wait and see, but Robert Woods is on the come. If you have a spot for him, I have him in a few of my leagues on my bench just for the heck of it, just to see how he's going to pan out as a rookie wide receiver, but you never know. You got anything, Black?
Nah. Just get to that one.
Okay. Here's one of my
– Continue with the bust from week one.
Here's another one, okay? Listen to me, people. A lot of people were on the Minnesota Viking bandwagon saying that they were going to contend for the division in the North. I'm not one of those people. I look at the quarterback. I think the quarterback is a piece of garbage. And I'll say it again and again. I do not like Christian Ponder. I do not like Christian Ponder. I do not like Christian Ponder. Okay? He gets Greg Jennings. Greg Jennings made the dumbest move he could go to with one of the worst quarterbacks in the league with Christian Ponder. All right, he's going to suffer for it for the simple fact that, I mean, Christian Ponder is going to have some good days, but he's going to have a lot more bad days. Adrian Peterson, they lean too much on Adrian Peterson, and I don't see Christian Ponder getting past week six. Week six, and I think his job is gone because the team's going to get disgruntled. The coaching staff's going to get disgruntled with this kid because he's so inconsistent and so inaccurate, and that's the problem. So even though I say Adrian Peterson is going to get his because he usually does against Chicago, these guys in the passing game, I think the only guy that I would really – and he's a boomer bust, let me put it this way – is Kyle Rudolph. Christian Ponder likes throwing Kyle Rudolph because he's a safe throw. He's a tight end and right off the out of the line of scrimmage, down the middle of the field or whatever, he can throw to him. If Adrian Peterson for some reason gets it down near the goal line and they need to throw it, Kyle Rudolph is the one they're going to throw. He's going to throw it to. He's big, strong tight end, and he likes to throw it to him in the red zone. So those two guys, Adrian Peterson, Kyle Rudolph on that one end. I'm not feeling Jerome Simpson or Greg Jennings simply because of Christian Ponder. On the other end, Jay Cutler showed well in the first game against Cincinnati, pulled out a win. They're playing at home. They're going home to play in Chicago, home opener against one of their division rivals. Jay Cutler is going to show out. They're going to get the ball more than Matt Forte in space. I really like Matt Forte in this game. I really like Brandon Marshall in this game. But both of these guys are on the roster now. There's nothing new that anybody needs to know here. I'm looking for Alshon Jeffrey. Minnesota's DBs can be thrown on, and I'm looking for Alshon Jeffrey to get into the mix this time. So if you have Alshon Jeffrey as a wide receiver three, that's a good play for you. He's not a wide receiver two yet, but he's a good play for a wide receiver three right now. And he could probably be – I wouldn't put him in the flex. I'd much rather have a running back that's a dual threat running back in the flex. But, excuse me, Alshon Jeffrey is a good play for a wide receiver three type of leagues. Let's move on to Black. You got anything for that?
No, you can move on.
Okay. Let's move on to the Redskins and at the Packers. Now, all my Redskin co-hosts and callers that like the Redskins in this game, one said the Redskins were going to win yesterday. The other one conceded that they were going to lose. I'm sure glad that he came to his senses because I don't see him winning this game in Green Bay, home opener, especially Green Bay coming off a tough loss against the 49ers. I don't see that happening. Robert Griffin III, he's still in the work in progress. He may play a little better than he did last week. You definitely got to start him. I would definitely start him. There's no two ways about it. Alfred Morris, I would definitely start him. Pierre Garçon should have a pretty decent day in here. Leonard Hankinson, everybody who's a Redskin fan or who fantasy football saw what Hankinson did on Monday night is probably jumping all over him on waiver wire. Guess what, people? If you put him in your lineup, you're going to get your feelings hurt. You're going to get your feelings hurt. All right, he's a very inconsistent wide receiver, and the reason why he was getting so many looks is because there was so much attention paid to Pierre Garçon and Santana Moss, and they were in huge, huge comeback mode. So I don't see Leonard Hankinson repeating that after for a second week. On the other side, now it's supposedly rain. It's off and on in Green Bay. It's supposed to be bad weather, but that's not going to deter this offense. Aaron Rodgers, Jordy Nelson, Jermichael Finley, Randall Cobb. But I'm looking for your James Jones fans. Don't get discouraged. I think James Jones is going to get involved. He's not going to get involved as much as you think. You have to realize this. The reason why James Jones was involved heavily last year because Jordy Nelson was in and out of the lineup and couldn't stay healthy consistently. So that's why James Jones was able to lead the wide receivers in touchdowns last year because of Jordy Nelson's inconsistency of being in the lineup. Well, Jordy Nelson is healthy. Jordy Nelson had a very good game last week, and he happens to be one of Aaron Rodgers' favorite targets. So he's going to be throwing. This is the pecking order. This is the pecking order as I see it, okay? Jordy Nelson, Randall Cobb, Jermichael Finley, James Jones is the fourth option, okay? So some people drafted James Jones as a wide receiver too. You're going to be disappointed more times than not because you got three guys that are going to get targets, more targets than on a consistent basis, more than James Jones. Now, sometimes, you know, every game's not going to be the same. James Jones, because these other guys may be covered more for the simple reason they're getting the most targets, he's going to have his days. But more times than not, he won't. So just keep that in mind. I absolutely love Randall Cobb and Jermichael Finley in this game. I think they're going to eat the Redskins secondary up. They can definitely be thrown on. That was proven last by Michael Vick and Brent Celek and Randall Cobb. I think they're going to eat him up, and Jordy Nelson is going to chime right in. And don't forget, once the game gets in hand, they still have this kid Eddie Lacy that they're going to run, and they're going to get him more heavily involved also. So they have a lot of weapons, a lot of mouths to feed, and Aaron Rodgers is the chef that's going to feed those feed his people. Let's move on to the Dolphins and the Colts. Colts playing at home. Dolphins come off a nice win against Cleveland in Cleveland. But they're going to drop back down to reality with here. I see Lamar Miller as being an extremely good player in here against a very porous, extremely porous Indianapolis run defense. So Lamar Miller, for those people who have Lamar Miller and got disappointed last week, you won't be disappointed this week. Unfortunately, they have Daniel Thomas, and they're going to be splitting carries. But I think the guy that you want to own is Lamar Miller. I think this is one of the weeks, if he wants to establish himself as the main back, he has to prove himself this week against a not too good a defense against the run, to distance himself from Daniel Thomas, to get the coaches to realize Daniel Thomas doesn't have anything on me. So I see him doing well. For those Mike Wallace fans, I don't know. I don't know what to tell you. He had one catch.
Bust.
He had one catch last week. Mike Wallace doesn't go over the middle. He's a nine guy. He's hard to like. I don't have Mike Wallace in any of my leagues because the fact is he's a one-trick pony. I don't like one-trick ponies as wide receivers. The wide receiver, in my opinion, especially in PPR to own, is Brian Hartline. I know a lot of people say, what, Brian Hartline? Yeah, Brian Hartline, because he's consistent. He'll go over the middle. He'll do a nine. He'll do all the route tree. Let me put it that way. He can do all the route tree. He may not have the quicks Mike Wallace has, but he runs very good routes. And I see Ryan Tannehill leaning on Brian Hartline. And they already said that we're going to try to get the ball to Mike Wallace, but only if it's within the offense. We're not going to go out of our way to get the ball to him. So that's telling me right there. Mike Wallace fans, you're in trouble because they're only going to throw deep balls to him or wide receiver screens or something like that. Nothing over the middle. I'd be very surprised about that. So I don't like Mike Wallace in this game at all. On the other side, Andrew Luck, you definitely got to play him. You are Ahmad Bradshaw fans. Now, Vic Ballard is not there. I hope you have a plan B, because Ahmad Bradshaw, he may run. And I don't think he will, because this is a pretty good run defense in Miami. I would ride Ahmad Bradshaw until the wheels fall off, and that could happen this week. That could happen next week. But he's going to get hurt, because that's his M.O. That's his M.O. He gets hurt. And then your backup to Ahmad Bradshaw is Donald Brown. Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? Donald Brown. Indianapolis got serious issues in the running game, so they better get a contingency plan that makes sense, because Donald Brown is not a good backup for injury-prone Ahmad Bradshaw. Play here is the two wide receivers, in my opinion, along with the tight end. Dwayne Allen, Reggie Wayne, T.Y. Hilton. They're going to try to get the ball more to T.Y. Hilton also. So, but T.Y. Hilton's got a lot of quicks and is the future of the Indianapolis Colts. Let's move on to one of my favorite games. I'm really anxious to see this, and I know Black is. Going to Arrowhead Stadium in Kansas City. Now, I'm going to give Black a chance.
Talk about my other bus, number 88.
No. Just calm down, man. Calm down. Let me talk about you play Tony Romo in this game.
You don't understand, man. I'm in five leagues. I got studs in all five leagues, and this was a culmination of every stud being a dud week one.
but it happens. It happens. It happens, Black. That's fantasy. Tony Romo is going to should have a very good day today. Should have a very good day today. He's going to be harassed because Kansas City Chiefs defense is no joke. They have some very good pass rushers on there at the fact. They got Eric Berry in the backfield. So look for Tony Romo to get picked off at least once in this game. I hate to say that, but he's going to definitely get picked off at least once in the game due to the, I think, from the pass rush that Kansas City is going to sustain here. They want to get DeMarco Murray more carries. So the play action for Tony Romo would work more if DeMarco Murray runs the ball more effectively. So DeMarco Murray is going to be able to have the opportunity to run more, and I think he's going to be able to run. I think he's going to be able to run against this defense. Quite naturally, the guys to have would be Jason Witten, Dez Bryant, and let me say this. We have about a minute and a half left in the show. We're going to be going into an overtime so I can completely finish here. The players I want to talk about haven't come up in the games I've come to yet. So I'm going to be talking about those players. So we're going to be going to overtime. I want to thank those who are going to be leaving me that tune in next week and or listen to the archives if you have something to do before the games, and then you can listen to the archives and make your adjustments if you need to. Anyway, in this game, okay, just like last game, the Giants keyed on Dez Bryant, and he got frustrated and didn't have a good week. And Miles Austin benefited from it. Well, last year, Miles Austin had a huge day the last time they played I don't know if it was last year. I think it was last year against the Kansas City Chiefs. I think this happens again. I think Miles Austin is one of these players that when they get to a certain team, the water parts. Things just happen. a lot easier for them, and things come to them a little easier against certain teams. I think Miles Austin and against the Kansas City Chiefs. This is one of my sleeper picks. I know he's probably on a lot of people's rosters. Maybe he's on a lot of people's benches. If you have questions on your wide receiver two, I would suggest putting in Miles Austin in your wide receiver two, not three, wide receiver two position, because I think he's going to have a pretty good day, in my opinion, against the Kansas City Chiefs, because all the attention is going to be on Dez Bryant and Jason Witten to stop those in the passing game, and leaving Miles Austin to run free on one-on-one coverage. So I like Miles Austin as a sleeper pick in this game in Kansas City. On the other side, Jamaal Charles, I think he can run against these guys, and I think he's going to be as consistent as he was last week. Andy Reid knows Dallas Cowboys from playing them against all the years with the Eagles. So he's going to use the weapons that he has to maximize the effectiveness of all his weapons, and that is including Jamaal Charles, along with getting the ball to Dwayne Bowe. So there's really no sleeper picks on that side. The one I had in there, in my opinion, would be Miles Austin because of the tension that's going to be put on the two main targets, which is Jason Witten and Dez Bryant. So, Dez, you may get frustrated again.
He's nursing some type of ankle injury. I'm like, man, this isn't the time. This isn't the time.
That's the time. Well, it's never the time. It's never a good time. But I've drafted Dez in a few leagues, and I have faith in Dez. I've never drafted him before, but I've drafted him this year. There's a few players I haven't drafted before in past years, and I've drafted this year because
and
I see him seem doing better.
Miles also on his note that he's a walking injury waiting to happen. So. We'll see what's going on.
Okay. All right, then let's move on to another game that's at 1 o'clock. It's the Baltimore Ravens hosting the Cleveland Browns. Brandon Weeden needs to reestablish himself, or I say reestablish himself, needs to regain the confidence, I would think, in the coaching staff after he threw three picks. They said they're going to get the ball to Trent Richardson more, North Turner. I believe that, and I think they rely more heavily on the run game and getting the ball to the tight end. I'm telling you this. I don't know how many waiver wire. I don't know how many, either he's on the bench or he's on a waiver wire, but this guy, he comes back next week. He's the number one wide receiver for Cleveland, and I think he's not going to skip a beat once he gets there. I'm talking about Josh Gordon. If you don't have Josh Gordon, or if somebody in your league doesn't have Josh Gordon, and he never got drafted because he was suspended for the first two games, go and grab him. He's not going to do you any good this week. But from week three on, Brandon Weeden is number one wide receiver, extremely underrated wide receiver. He's got issues off the field, but he has no issues on the field when he's playing. Go grab Josh Gordon. Absolutely. I've grabbed him whenever it was available. There's two wide receivers that I grabbed that a lot of people – I wouldn't say slept on, but because they weren't available the first week or the second week of the season, they didn't draft them, or some smart fantasy football owners grabbed them. Josh Gordon is one of them, he was suspended for the first 2 weeks, and Justin Blackmon for the other, because he was suspended for 4 weeks. These are two number one wide receivers. they're going to get targeted. Targets are opportunities. So to make plays. PPR, these guys are the number one wide receivers. So their quarterbacks, especially the young quarterbacks, are going to try to get the ball to their number one wide receivers. So either one of these guys or both of them, I picked up some of these guys on my roster, or both of them on my roster, or at least one of them. Go pick them up, because week three, Josh Gordon comes back. Week five, Justin Blackmon comes back. Number one wide receivers that are truly number one wide receivers are hard to find. So, anyway, let me and also in this Cleveland Browns, Jordan Cameron is definitely going to be used in this North Turner offense. So those two guys are definitely. I have nothing that's not out of the obvious on the Baltimore side. You're going to play Ray Rice. A lot of people are going to play Torrey. Oh, I'm sorry. This guy's on the come up. I think he's going to play better because Joe Hayden is going to be on Torrey Smith. He's going to mirror him all over the field. And just like last week, where Marlon Brown had four or five catches for 40, 50 yards, whatever it was, and a touchdown, I think he can do the same thing. This Marlon Brown kid is the other option on the other side of the field. 6'4", 6'5", somewhere around there, rookie. But Joe Flacco has confidence in him because he used him last week, and he came through scoring a touchdown. I think he's going to be doing the same thing this week. So that's one of the guys I've talked about that I really like is Marlon Brown. I talked about him last week. I'm going to talk about him again this week. Marlon Brown. Let's move on to one of my favorite games, and I'm anxious to see what these boys, my boys, are going to do here. I'm talking about the Tennessee Titans going up against the Houston Texans. Tennessee's got a stiff offense. This is another one of my favorite, and I'm being sarcastic, quarterbacks, Jake Locker. He's another quarterback that sucks. I can't believe these guys have starting jobs. I cannot believe these guys have starting jobs. Now, I talked about Christian Ponder and how inaccurate he was. Jake Locker is even worse. He's even worse. So if you have any wide receivers on there, on the Tennessee Titans, I mean, every now and then a squirrel does find a nut, meaning Jake Locker, but I don't like any of these wide receivers on the Titans, and I haven't drafted one on any of my teams because of the fact that the quarterback is so inaccurate and so inconsistent. He's a little over 50% in completion rate. That sucks. And that's historic. That's even when he was in college. So he stinks. And they keep on running this kid out there. Anyway, they're going to rely on Chris Johnson. And I think Chris Johnson, he had a decent day, a decent time last year, running against my Houston Texans. And I think he can still do the same thing. But that's the only one that I like on the Titans. On the other side of the ball, these two guys, I don't know if they like each other or they're gaining animosity toward each other, but Arian Foster wasn't happy with the time share last week, even though he got 24 carries versus Ben Tate's 11. And Ben Tate wants the ball more. And on tape, you can see that Ben Tate was a better runner last week. But that could be because of rust from Arian Foster, because he didn't do anything during the preseason. So, people, Arian Foster, Ben Tate, you know what? I have Arian Foster in some leagues, and I have Ben Tate in others. I don't think I have him. I think maybe one league I have him on both on one team. I think Arian Foster is the target here. I think that's the one that the coaches really want as a lead back, but because he didn't get that much work preseason. They wanted timeshare to try to save him because, like I talked previously in other shows, his workload over the last few years has been extremely high. So I think they're trying to temper that, especially when they have a runner capable like Ben Tate. And this is in a contract year for Ben Tate. So Ben Tate has extra motivation to show what he can do because if he's not with Houston, he can take his talents elsewhere and get paid. So both these guys want to be on the field to run the ball. But my money's on Arian Foster for now until he proves me wrong. Ben Tate's probably the number one handcuff for a running back in the league because the skill set of Ben Tate. Andre Johnson, quite naturally, he's going to get a lot of targets in here. Owen Daniels, quite naturally, going to get a lot of targets in here. I still like DeAndre Hopkins.
You forgot to add Andre Johnson, quite naturally, also known as Bag of Bricks.
Bag of Bricks. Stop. I understand. he got a lot of yardage last week, but he didn't get any touchdowns. I understand that. And that's the caveat of having Andre Johnson. He gets a lot of yardage, gets a lot of targets and catches, but he doesn't get into the end zone that often. You're right. You're absolutely right. And I don't know if that changes. I mean, it held true to the first game the past week. I think he gets into the end zone this week. I really believe he gets into the end zone this week. Matt Schaub is in a contract year. There's two guys here on the offense that are in contract years, Matt Schaub and Ben Tate. So you can rest assured these guys are going to try to ball out whenever they get the chance because they want to get paid. So with that being said, I still hold on to DeAndre Hopkins. I think as the season goes on, this kid's going to develop more and more as a Julio Jones type of wide receiver to Andre Johnson's Roddy White. So that's the analogy I'm putting there. So you have DeAndre Hopkins. He may not have done a lot last week, but as the season goes on, he's going to progressively get better, and quite naturally, he's going to benefit you. Let's move on to I think this is a 4 o'clock game here, if I'm not mistaken. No, this is another 1 o'clock game. This is going to be an interesting game. They're playing in the Philly. San Diego Chargers moving all the way over to the West Coast against a heartbreaking loss against my Houston Texans to play the Philadelphia high-octane offense. Ryan Matthews surprised me. He was able to stay in the game and come out of it healthy. That's an accomplishment for him. That is an accomplishment for Ryan Matthews, even though they're in a timeshare with Ronnie Brown. The backfield here, Matthews, Woodhead, Brown, you know, you're rolling the dice if you have any of these guys because the fact is I don't think they're going to be doing too much of anything because they're going to be always in a committee unless somebody gets hurt or somebody really breaks out. One of the sleeper guys here, and he's being discounted because the last few years that he hasn't played well or hasn't produced, is Antonio Gates. I know he's long in the tooth, but I think he's not a tight end, a high-end tight end one anymore, but I think he can consistently get you 10 to 12 to 13 fantasy points week in and week out because Philip Rivers still looks for his old mainstay, Antonio Gates. So he's going to get 4 or 5 catches, about 40, 50 yards somewhere in there, and he looks for him in the end zone, which he still can get free with all the experience in the end zone. So I think he's going to be consistent. The one guy I see here who was hurt last year, and he scored a touchdown, and I think he's going to be even better as the year goes on, is Vincent Brown. I know a lot of people think Malcolm Floyd was number one last year, or Denario Alexander until he got hurt, then Malcolm Floyd. Vincent Brown he came on the scene a few years ago, got hurt, got hurt last year, and but I think this kid is really going to develop into a big time wide receiver for Phillip Rivers. Now, if the key is this, if Phillip Rivers can stay upright against this Philadelphia rush, because Phillip Rivers is a pocket quarterback, so they know where to find Phillip Rivers, right in the pocket. They're going to go after Phillip Rivers. They're going to cut the head off, and the body's going to fall. On the other side, in this offense, Michael Vick is a definite play. I see these guys blowing the doors off of San Diego. I see these guys. I see these guys. Yes, yes. I see these guys. If you saw the exuberance that the Philadelphia Eagles had last week against what this offense can do in a regular game, and that was just the first game. As long as these guys stay healthy, I see this offense doing it is on the upcome. In my opinion, you haven't seen anything yet. I think that they're going to try a whole bunch of things and run a whole bunch more plays. More plays mean more opportunities. Brent Celek is a sleeper tight end. I'm telling you, people. Michael Vick had an epiphany a couple years ago and realized he had what kind of tight end he had in Brent Celek. He started getting really involved in the offense, not last year, but the year before. With the inconsistency of him getting hurt last season, hurt the effectiveness of Brent Celek. In this offense, Brent Celek is going to be open in the middle of the field because these guys are going to stretch the defense when DeSean Jackson and Riley Cooper. So Brent Celek is going to be running wide open in the middle of the field. So I really like Brent Celek in this game. San Diego is historically weak defending the tight end. And Brent Celek, believe it or not, is on a lot of waiver wires, just sitting there waiting to be taken. He scored a touchdown last week. He can score another touchdown easily this week. DeSean Jackson is rejuvenated in this offense. It's absolutely rejuvenated. I wasn't a big DeSean Jackson fan, but when I saw the offense in the preseason and how they were implementing the offense, let me put it this way. If you're in the league, PPR for one, and you have settings in your league for big plays, like 50-plus reception, 50-yard-plus reception, and you get extra points for that, you jump all over DeSean Jackson because he's a big play wide receiver, and Michael Vick has a big arm and likes to throw down the field to him. You can get crazy points just from one play, 60, 70-yard touchdown play in a PPR league for DeSean Jackson. That blows away the ESPN. Say it's ESPN that has a 16, 17-point estimate that DeSean Jackson is going to have on one particular matchup. 60, 70-yard play puts that in play right there. You get 70 yards. That's you get 7 points for that. You get 6 points for the touchdown. If the touchdown is 6 points, that's 13. And you get another for the catch. That's 14. You think he's not going to get another 3 points? That's what I'm saying. You get extra points for big plays. DeSean Jackson is your type of wide receiver that you should have on your team. Anyway. Let's move on to the Lions and the Cardinals. This is one of my sleeper, because a lot of people probably didn't draft him. He's probably sitting on some people's benches. But I think in this game, and I'm on the fringe here, if I really want to say they play this guy in this game. Because I know Detroit has a pretty good pass rush, but they have lousy DBs. But you know what? I'm going to go out on a limb here. Play Carson Palmer this week at home. Play Carson Palmer this week at home. This is a Bruce Arians type offense. They're going to throw the ball all over the field, all over the field, especially when they have a running back like Rashard Mendenhall, who absolutely, in my opinion, sucks. They're going to throw the ball all over the field. You got Larry Fitz, who's nursing a hamstring. You got Michael Floyd, and you got Andre Roberts. I like all three of these wide receivers. I think all three of these wide receivers get close to 70 yards. I think, this is what I'm saying, I think all three of these wide receivers, because they throw so much, get close to 70 yards at least. Quite naturally, Larry Fitz is the number one target. He's going to get the most targets. That doesn't always equate to the most catches, but targets equal opportunities. So I think he's going to get six or seven catches, about close to 90 yards, and a touchdown. But don't discount Michael Floyd or Andre Roberts. One of these guys are wide receiver three, wide receiver four, somewhere around there, and they can give you wide receiver two numbers because the fact is they throw the ball so much, they give you more, they give you enough targets and opportunities for them to get into the end zone. Michael Floyd is getting better and better. I talked about this kid in the previous season. He's getting better and better as the weeks go on. He worked out with Larry Fitzgerald again over the summer. And Larry Fitzgerald is raving about this kid. He made a dynamic one-handed catch. I think it was right on the 1 or 2 yard line, just short of the end zone last week. He's got big play potential in a big play potential type of offense. With that being said, since they don't have a really too much of a running game, these wide receivers are going to be leaned on a lot. On the other side of the ball, I love this kid. I absolutely love this kid, and I think this is a sleeper team, one of the sleeper teams of the year, and that's the Detroit Lions. Matthew Stafford, they love this is in my opinion, if you have wide receivers in this matchup, and Reggie Bush or Joique Bell in this matchup, you're going to benefit because both these teams have the same philosophy of passing the ball, making big plays down the field. So Matthew Stafford's going to be throwing the ball to Calvin Johnson, to Nate Burleson, to Joseph Ferrier, Tony Scheffler, Brandon Pettigrew, and to Joique Bell. All three of those, all those guys, five, six of those guys are going to get involved in the offense. It's just a matter of how much of the offense. Joique Bell is probably the goal line back. He also can catch the ball out of the back. He's a very versatile back. Reggie Bush, what can I say? He had a huge day last week, and I expect him to do the same in Arizona. There's really no sleepers here. Other than me telling you to play Carson Palmer, if you happen to be in a deep league and you're searching for a quarterback to play and you have reservations about Carson Palmer, don't. Play him. Play him. I'm telling you to play him. Anyway, let's move on to another game here, the Buccaneers at the Saints. I'm not high on Josh Freeman. He's too inconsistent for me. They're going to try to run the ball a lot. And New Orleans can be run on. They can be run on. And I think Doug Martin is going to have a very good day. Muscle Hamster is going to get close to 100 yards and a touchdown. Vincent Jackson is going to get close to 100 yards and a touchdown. Mike Williams, this is going to be, I would say, probably a relatively high-scoring game. I still think Mike Williams, all he does is catch his touchdowns. I think he can do the same thing because a lot of attention is going to be paid on Vincent Jackson, and they're going to leave Mike Williams alone, and he likes to run wild. And I think he can get into the end zone. I have a dilemma in one of my leagues. Fortunately, these guys are playing about the same time. The previous game, Detroit against Arizona, Larry Fitzgerald is one of my wide receivers. Supposedly, he's a game-time decision. All right? Hopefully, you have a wide receiver like I do, like Mike Williams, that is playing the same time. So if for some reason come 4 o'clock or come 3:30, 3:45 or whatever, when you find out whether Fitzgerald is playing or not, if he's not playing, you can insert Mike Williams into Fitzgerald's spot. Now, I'm not saying you're going to get the same type of production. You expect the worst and hope for the best. But he's an ample substitution to put in with a last-minute add-in if Larry Fitz happens to be a scratch for some reason. On the other side, Drew Brees, you know he's a natural play. Darren Sproles, you know he's a natural play. Jimmy Graham, you know he's a natural play. Marcus Colson, you know he's a natural play. And also in PPR, in a wide receiver three, and even, wide receiver three, you can put Lance Moore in there. Now, this is one guy here. Now, the talk is this. Tampa got run on by the Jets, surprisingly, last week. So it's still up in the air whether they are a stout run defense or not. There's a lot of turmoil going on in Tampa, and I don't know if it's playing out on the field or not. Mark Ingram was supposed to be the guy to run the ball, okay? He didn't show out too well in the first game against the Atlanta Falcons. And Pierre Thomas, he's probably be sitting on people's waiver wires. He's not a wide receiver. Excuse me. He's not a running back one. He's not a running back two. Okay. But he's a very good flex play. Okay. I would put Pierre Thomas in a flex type of position, not in a RB one or two, quite naturally. But he's an option if for some reason you have like a Shane Vereen that you had in the flex. And he's hurt. You don't have any really ample options in the flex. And put in Pierre Thomas. What do you have to lose? Something like that. Now, in this game, I don't know who's going to be worse in this game here. Another 4 o'clock game starting off at 4:25. We're talking about the juggernaut of the Jacksonville Jaguars against the other juggernaut, the Oakland Raiders.
Oh, boy.
Anyway, let me put it this way. I don't know if it was something that came down from the heavens that Blaine Gabbert got hurt, but Chad Henne is now the quarterback, and I think all the players, especially the skilled players on the offensive side, have got down on their knees and said thank you to the Lord, put Chad Henne in there versus Blaine Gabbert, a more capable quarterback. I'm not saying that you start him, but it'll help the offense quite a bit. Experienced quarterback that's got a little bit more accuracy than quite naturally than Blaine Gabbert, who was absolutely horrible last week. That's my third quarterback. I got a triple threat here of terrible quarterbacks. Blaine Gabbert, Jake Locker, and Christian Ponder. How these guys have jobs at starting quarterbacks, it boggles my mind. But anyway, Maurice Jones-Drew is going to be the number one issue here, Oakland Raiders. Oakland can be run on. I think Maurice Jones-Drew shows himself. This one guy I've never drafted in fantasy football. I did it this year because I think he's going to have I want to say he's an RB2, hopefully with RB1 upside, and that's what I'm hoping for. He should be able to run on this Oakland Raider defense. I don't think they're going to win the game, but he should be able to run this Oakland Raider defense. This is good news for Cecil Shorts that Chad Henne is inserted into the lineup. I think he had a decent day four or five catches, 60 to 70 yards and a touchdown. And that's what you probably can expect from week to week. As long as Chad Henne's in the lineup, you can expect that from Cecil Shorts. On the other side, I think Darren McFadden, home opener, with a renewed hope in their team because of Terrell Pryor. If you have Terrell Pryor, play him. Play him. You know why? He's a dual threat. You see what he did last week? He ran for 180-something yards, 190-something, whatever it was, as a quarterback. And the fact is, he didn't pass that bad. I mean, it wasn't Aaron Rodgers type of passing, but he didn't pass that bad. And in my opinion, I think he's only going to get better. That quite naturally, he's a young quarterback. He has accuracy issues, so he's going to have his bad days and good days. But this is a home opener. The team is very confident behind him. Now, I'm going to put it like this, okay? I saw them play in preseason. I saw Matt Flynn come out. And as soon as the Terrell Pryor come in, you can see the attitude and the energy level of the team picked up. Got a bunch of brothers. Saw a brother quarterback come in there, and I'm going to put it plain and simple. You got a bunch of brothers on the offense and defense. See the brother come in there at the quarterback, and that energy level picked up. Substantially picked up. So I think the coaching staff realized that. And that's why he's still the starting quarterback. He's a dual threat quarterback. He can run the hell out of the ball, and he can throw it maybe not as accurately as you would like, but he can throw the ball. He's not a Tim Tebow. Tim Tebow has no quicks and is very inaccurate. Terrell Pryor's got quicks, and he's a lot more accurate than Tim Tebow. With that being said, I think Darren McFadden should be able to run the ball effectively because of the fact they have a running quarterback. So they have Jacksonville's going to have a choice. Do we take the quarterback? Do we take the running back? And that always benefits the running back, and I think he's going to be able to run the ball. With that being said, I have another sleeper here. I really like this kid. He really helped out Terrell Pryor last week, and I think they're getting a rapport with each other, and I think it's only going to grow. You get this guy, I'm telling you right now, put this guy on your bench, take a look, because I think after this week, you want to going to want to put him into your lineup as a wide receiver three.
Let me take a guess before you blow him up. Let me see if I can dig into the mind of the master and come out with my best impression. Could this be a Rod Streeter?
Exactly. Absolutely. You're right on, man. You're right on. I'm telling you, people, this guy is as long as Terrell Pryor is in the game, they started in the preseason. It continued in the first game, and I think it's only going to continue. As long as these two guys stay healthy, they're going to get a better rapport with each other. Rod Streeter, a lot of people, because it's an Oakland Raider wide receiver, wasn't on the radar. Rod Streeter. That's all I can tell you. Put him on your bench this week and see what happens. I think you're going to want to insert him next week because the fact is you'll like what you see over the last two bodies of work, last week and this week. All right, let's get to the Manning Bowl, talking about the Denver Broncos meeting the New York Giants. Wow. Let me tell you something, people. Both these guys are going to sling the ball around. This is one of these games that if you have one or two of these guys on your team, you want to put them in a lineup. You got Peyton Manning or Eli Manning, you want to put them in the lineup. You got Noshon Marino, Noshon Marino or Eli Manning, David Wilson, you definitely want to put them in the lineup. I'm still hung up because I think this kid's the best running back there, Armani Ball. So the jury's out on Armani Ball. I have to wait and see how they use him this week before I can really assess where he's at. But Julius Thomas, Giants are notoriously bad against the tight end. The three wide receivers.
I'm debating that move right now in one of my leagues.
What's that?
They want me to get rid of Daniel Thomas, the backup there in Miami, and they want me to pick up Monty Ball. So I'm debating whether I'm going to make this move or not.
Well, Daniel Thomas is splitting carries with Lamar Miller, and Monty Ball, in my opinion, is a better back than Daniel Thomas, but he's like second on the chart. You know, who's your running back?
Thomas get the goal line carry last week?
Who's your running back, Block?
Oh, hold on. Let me get to my team here. I'm going through all my leagues right now, setting things up. Like I did last week, I ended up having Gronk on my active roster when I wanted to put them on the IR.
Oof.
But let me see here. Jamal Charles, Daniel Thomas, and Jacquez Rogers.
That's your three running backs?
Yeah, those are my three running backs.
You only allowed three?
Only allowed to have three. Yep.
Who else is on the way? Wait a minute. You tell me Monty Ball. You say Monty Ball's on the waiver wire?
Yeah.
Wow.
16 team league. Only allowed three backs on the roster.
Wow.
Means I would have to cut either Jacquez or Thomas because I'm not letting Jamal Charles go anywhere. So it'll be a battle between those two. But Jackie Battles on the free agent, Pierre Thomas, Ronnie Brown, and Monty Ball. So Pierre Thomas is also on the free agent list.
Well, I would pick up Pierre Thomas because he's a more consistent back than the other guys you're talking about. I really like Monty Ball, but three running backs. Wow, that's tough.
Yeah, it's a tough league, man. Tough league. Even though I destroyed my guy last week, but that's neither here nor there. I need to get some running backs here. And they're projecting Jackie Battle got eight last week, and they're projecting him for another eight this week.
Well. That's it. Was it? He's in. Was it? Where's he at?
Tennessee.
Tennessee. Because Sean Green's hurt. Wow. That's a tough decision, man.
Yes, it is.
I would have to go with. I would stick with Daniel Thomas. Because he's getting equal splits and goal lines. Pierre Thomas and Mark Ingram are splitting. Jacquez Rogers only gets in every now and then. Doesn't really get that much. Monty Ball. I really like Monty Ball until that backfield plays out. You know what? This is what I would do. I would hold on to Daniel Thomas. I would get rid of Jacquez Rogers, and I would pick up Monty Ball. That's what I would do. That's what I would do, because Jacques Rogers doesn't get as close as touches. He's sporadic, man. You never know what you're going to get from Jacques Rogers.
Exactly.
Daniel Thomas is going to get touches, and Monty Ball is going to, as the year goes on, is going to get more and more touches, and he may wind up being the lead back. Jacques Rogers, his job is set unless Steven Jackson gets hurt. I would roll with Daniel Thomas and Monty Ball versus having Jacques Rogers on my roster. How you feel about that?
I think I'm going to make that move, man. Jacques, he just languishes on my bench, and I can't ever see him starting Jacques. So I would never have to start him. So yeah, I'll probably make this move here.
Yeah, that is the only.
Even though Jackie Bad was sitting on top of this list, it's very intriguing.
Well, you don't know, man. I mean, I understand what you're saying, but I don't like Jackie Battle. He's a plotter, man. He may get the goal lines, but how often they're going to be down in the goal line against the Houston Texans? That's just it. So if they score, it's going to be a long run from Chris Johnson, or by chance, Locker throws a touchdown pass. I don't think they're going to be on the goal line that much against the Texans and Jackie Battle score. So in my opinion, you're probably better off with Monty Ball and Daniel Thomas. You know, Daniel Thomas is going to get goal lines if they get down there. And Miami's got a better chance of getting goal line against Indianapolis than Tennessee against Houston.
Exactly. Well,
so,
this move was made.
So, let me. Where am I at? Oh, I lost my position here. Where was I at? All right, let's move on to the next game, and that would be. Hold on, let me get there. Where am I at? Broncos and Giants. Yeah, that's what I was talking about.
Yeah.
We're getting down there. All right. This is all fantasy goodness here. Let me put it this way. Especially in the wide receivers. That's mainly what I'm talking about. If you have any of these wide receivers on either side of the ball, I would put them into your lineup. Quite naturally, the level of type of wide receiver one versus wide receiver three are going to change. Demaryius Thomas, Victor Cruz, and Hakeem Nicks. Wide receiver Demaryius Thomas is definitely a wide receiver one. Victor Cruz is a wide receiver one. Wes Welker and Hakeem Nicks are wide receivers two. Eric Decker and Reuben Randall are wide receiver three. And these two tight ends, both of these teams are susceptible against the tight end. Julius Thomas is definitely a play in the tight end position, and the same goes for Brandon Myers. Eli likes to rely to throw in the middle of the field if he doesn't have any other options, and Brandon Myers is the big, consistent target. So both these guys are definite plays in those respective areas, along with the two quarterbacks. These guys are going to be slinging the ball a lot because both sides, to tell you the truth, David Wilson is probably the most consistent of these running backs. I shouldn't say consistent, the most dynamic, or can be the most dynamic and explosive of all these running backs. Until Monty Ball gets a clear sight to be the main guy, then it's all on David Wilson to be the best running back today. With that being said, let's move to the Sunday night game, big game here, played in Seattle, the Niners, big division rivalry, the San Francisco 49ers and the Seattle Seahawks, as the respective defensive players have said. Colin Kaepernick and Russell Wilson, in my opinion, are both players in here, and I have either one of these guys on different lineups. You play both these guys. These guys are going to show out, going to try to one-up each other. They have the eyebrow bet on. Whoever loses has to shave their eyebrow, from what I've seen. So we'll see what happens there. Frank Gore, in my opinion, is going to have a hard way to go here. Running the ball, he doesn't have a good history against running against the Seahawks. Marshawn Lynch needs to beast out. You gotta start these guys. These guys are you drafted these guys high. You gotta start them. There's no two ways about it. Vernon Davis, I like Vernon Davis in this game because I think they're going to really try to shut down Anquan Boldin, and Vernon Davis is the next best offensive option for Colin Kaepernick. So Vernon Davis is big time playing here. Don't expect the same type of production you had from Anquan Boldin the first week to this week. You got Richard Sherman and Brandon Browner. I think if Brandon Browner plays, because I think there's a question of whether he plays or not. But Richard Sherman, it's going to be all over Anquan Boldin to stop him from having a monster week like he had in week one. On the other side, there's another emerging wide receiver. I think Pete Carroll said this guy's one of the smartest players he has on his team, and that's Golden Tate. Golden Tate is playing for a contract this year, so he's balling out like all guys who, for the most part, who have in their contract year. And I think Russell Wilson is having more and more of a comfort issue with Golden Tate. He's a wide receiver three, and he can possibly get two wide receiver two and wide receiver number one in this game because the 49ers, they have a good defense, but they can be thrown on. As evidenced last week with the Green Bay Packers. So I like Golden Tate in here. Doug Baldwin is an intriguing one for me, too. I have to see more from Sidney Rice because he's inconsistent. But these two young guys, Doug Baldwin and Golden Tate, I like these guys or not. He can possibly use them in a wide receiver three, maybe four. If you have four wide receivers, you need to start. And there's another guy here that I need you to look at.
Jermaine Kearse.
Exactly. Man, you must be reading my notes, man. I'm looking around, see if there's a camera somewhere. anyway, Jermaine Kearse.
We are young in the kid. Beast mode locker room at this current moment.
Anyway, this kid is coming on. He scored a touchdown. He scored an acrobatic touchdown last week. So he's on the radar. We'll see what happens this week if he can keep it up. He's usually these young wide receivers are inconsistent. We'll see how consistent he can be and if he's able to keep up his level of play from last week to this week. And then we have the Sorry Bowl on Monday night. The Sorry Steelers. I can't say Sorry Bengals, but the Sorry Steelers. And I can't believe that. So I got to believe they're going to play better because it's against a division opponent. That the Steelers, as bad as they showed out last week, because they were probably one of the biggest disappointments in the NFL last week, as bad as they played. So I got to think they're going to put out a better effort than they put out last week, even though they're missing their All-Pro center, which is a huge hit for the offensive line. Don't like any of their running backs. Not until Le'Veon Bell comes back. He won't be back for the next 3-4 weeks, something like that. He's dealing with a Lisfranc. I'm still staying consistent.
Bell, and I will say Jonathan Dwyer, but guess what? They cut him.
Well, no, Jonathan Dwyer is back.
Oh, he's back?
Yeah, they brought Jonathan Dwyer back. So Isaac Redman, I said last week, and I keep on saying it. Isaac Redman is, I can't, he's lousy. He stinks. and he got benched last week. So I don't like Isaac Redman. I don't like Jonathan Dwyer because these two guys are plotters. They're not smart running backs. Le'Veon Bell is back to own. If somebody was stupid enough to drop him because he's hurt for the next 3 or 4 weeks, pick him up as quick as possible. If you can give a BS trade out there for Le'Veon Bell, pick him up. Keep him on your bench until he gets healthy because he's going to be a very good back once he gets the opportunity to play, even though the offensive line has been hurt with the loss of their center. The plays here are the two wide receivers because they're going to have to throw the ball a lot. Antonio Brown and Emmanuel Sanders. Quite naturally, I've been an Antonio Brown supporter for a few years now, and I think he's still a viable play here. Six or seven catches, 70, 80 yards, and I definitely think he gets into the end zone. I think both these guys get into the end zone because I think they're going to throw the ball a lot. They're going to have to because the running backs suck. So, and on the other side, Ben Jarvis, Green Ellis, it's only a matter of time, people, before the Giovanni Bernard gets the starting job and is a consistent runner, and Ben Jarvis will be the complement or the guy who gives Giovanni a breather. But until then, it's a committee with Ben Jarvis, Green Ellis getting the majority of the carries. Before the midseason, this is going to be reversed. So just be patient. Giovanni is in my opinion, a flex. You can put him in a flex. He's going to give you some decent flex numbers, before he actually is the lead back. The only other guy in here that I really like, and quite naturally everybody likes him, is AJ Green. And with that being said, Black, you got anything that you want to?
I have Sanu reaching the end zone this game. My sleeper for this game, Mohamed Sanu.
Mohamed Sanu. Okay. Okay. Mohamed Sanu. Okay. I think I named all the. Oh no. Okay. If you're looking for a defense. If for some reason that you're up in the air about a defense, or you're really feeling queasy about a defense, and you're looking for a defense that is going to give you some sleeper picks, I mean some nice numbers. Let me give you a tidbit here, okay? You got the New York Jets with a rookie quarterback, all right? So quite naturally, New England already played, and if you had New England, you picked up some decent fantasy points because of the turnovers that the Patriots were able to generate from the Jets. My other team that you put a defense up against is the Jacksonville Jaguars. With their quarterback play and their ineptitude on offense, even though Chad Henne is still there, they still are not that good on offense. The Oakland Raiders, I know, people are saying the Oakland Raiders, can you really trust the Oakland Raiders? They're playing at home. Like I said before, they have renewed hope because they feel very comfortable more comfortable with the quarterback they have of Terrell Pryor versus Matt Flynn. I like a team that's playing home, their home opener, going up against a team that's struggling on offense, coming from the East Coast to the West Coast to play a football game. I'm going with the Oakland Raiders in as many games as I can possibly put in, teams as I can possibly put in, because I think they're going to be turning the ball over on the Jacksonville Jaguars on a regular basis today. So that's what my sleeper defensive pick is, the Oakland Raiders. Probably just for this week, too. So, anyway, with that being said, Black, do you got anything else before we get out of here?
I have one last question. I'm sitting here scratching my eyes out, trying to figure out whether I should trust Pittsburgh's defense against Cincinnati or Seattle's defense versus San Fran.
Oh.
Yeah.
Pittsburgh's playing at Cincinnati, and San Fran's playing at Seattle. Oh, wow.
Yeah. And I'm sure the difference is probably it'd be 2 or 3 points either way, but I need those 2 or 3 points either way.
Who do you have playing at home? What defense do you have playing at home?
I have the Steelers defense, and I have Seattle at home.
Seattle. I know. Seattle. I would go with Seattle. I would go with Seattle. I mean, you have to think that what the type of game is the Steelers going to play against the Bengals in Cincinnati?
That could be low scoring, though.
Okay. Well, I mean, you asked for my opinion. I mean, more than likely, team.
I'm not talking to the enemy today, anyway. I made up my time. Let's just get off the air. Let's get out of here.
with that being said, I want to thank you for joining me this morning, man. I want to wish my opponent, Mr. Django, good luck. But I'm going to have to tell him I'm going to whip him like I owned him. But you have other leagues that you're in. I want to wish you good luck on those. I guess I'll be catching you on the.
I'm bagging in effect on Thursday, man.
Good. That's good.
I was trying to catch you guys Friday, but you know everybody's on vacation, so I said, all right, I'll just wait till Thursday.
Mm-hmm. No problem. With that being said, I'm going to close this out with a little bit of Ludacris. We're out of here. See ya.
DJ Khaled. Hey. Yeah. All I do is win, 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 no matter what. Got money on my mind, I can never get enough. And every time I step up in the building, everybody hands go up. And they stay there.